Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the TWS Sports Podcast.
The question is darts really a sport?
It was the worst tackle I've ever seen.
Fair play to Joe Root, it was a great knock.
There's nothing like a good derby match.
It was easily the best 7-iron I've ever hit.
Right, come on lads, let's crack on.
Hello and welcome to the TWS Sports Podcast with me, Adam Millichip. I am joined by my colleague and good friend Nigel. How are you, Nigel?
Adam, I am really well, Adam, and really, really happy, of course, because we are recording this the day after that England beat Denmark to reach the finals of Euro 2020.
We are, and hopefully when this goes out on air, they'll be champions. That would be nice.
That'd be amazing.
Well, Adam, can I just clarify, are you Welsh, Adam?
I am.
So you're currently pretending to be supporting England.
Well,
meanwhile, you're digging through your roots trying to find some sort of brother called Francesco so you can support Italy. Yeah, well, I've got a lot of Scottish friends who are much more brazen. So they originally brought a Ukrainian shirt. Then they brought a Danish shirt. And now my Scottish friends are going out to buy an Italian shirt.
Well, I won't say the sort of things that he's been putting on our WhatsApp group, Will, but they haven't been complimentary, I've got to say that.
I bet he called Raheem Sterling. I bet he said he dived.
It wasn't...
That Danish bloke nearly...
We haven't discussed it there.
That's... Nearly rugby tackled him. It was certainly a penalty.
We're also joined by our other co-host, Thomas. How are you, Thomas?
Great, thanks. Can't wait to get some facts on the way.
So I've got a question for you, Thomas. Are you a Tom, a Tommy, a Thomas, a TW, a T-Meister, a T-General?
Well, the most recommended one that I go by is Tom, really. Tom.
That'll do for me, Tom.
I like the T-Meister personally, but hey, ask him to think about Tom.
Yeah.
So... Tenorwood School is a school for children and young adults with autism, and we've set this podcast up to provide our pupils with a fantastic opportunity to develop a range of skills whilst interviewing top sportsmen and women from a variety of different sports. Now, before we introduce today's guest, I just want to say thank you to all our listeners for their amazing support. We've received so many lovely messages from around the world, and we'll share some of these later in the podcast. Please keep the messages coming. You can contact us on social media by searching TWS Sports Podcast or by emailing twssportspodcast@hotmail.com. That's twssportspodcast@hotmail.com. Joining us today on the TWS Sports Podcast is a former England and British Lions rugby player. He won the 2003 Rugby World Cup, beating Australia in a nail-biting final. Please welcome to the TWS Sports Podcast the one and only Will Greenwood.
What, Where's the Take That music? Where's Never Forget banging out? You know, where's One Direction? There's nothing
to here, I'm afraid.
We'll add that in. We'll add it in for you.
You could, yeah. Some sort of splendid drum roll.
Any particular song you want there, Will?
Never Forget, Take That is always good. Love a bit of Neil Diamond.
We might have to do our own rendition of it, though, Will. That's the only problem, because of copyright and things like that. So, it may be me strumming a guitar and Adam singing.
It may not go
as quite as well as you think it does.
Tom, you're on drums. On drums, okay.
Tom on drums or bass guitar, whichever he fancies.
I wanted to ask Tom of it with his top, which seems like a sort of the infant Imperial Guard, are they, Tom, on the front of your T-shirt?
Yeah, they're really going for their Beatles phase.
I know. So which one of that Imperial Guard is John Lennon?
Probably the second one is John Lennon.
Perfect. Love the Beatles.
Will, just taking you back to the start of your career and your childhood, basically. Did you have any sporting heroes growing up, and how did you get into rugby in the first place?
I had sporting heroes from the year dot. I actually grew up in Italy, and the first real recollection would probably be, certainly from World Cups, would be the 82 World Cup, the Football World Cup in 82. But my football recollection would start before that. I'm a Man City fan, but I remember Arsenal beating Man United 3-2 in an FA Cup final in 1979. I remember exactly where I was sat, and Alan Sunderland scoring at the far post. So I'm a bit of an anorak for sport, and I've just devoured as much sport as I possibly can, really, from the moment I was stuck in front of a TV or stuck in front of a radio, or I could read the back pages of the newspaper. I've been very fortunate to have attended some awesome sporting events through the years, played in a few pretty special ones. And it probably was basically down to the fact that my whole family, cousins, brothers, sisters, mum, dad, grandparents, all absolutely love sports. So whereas some families might go to music festivals, or some would go to dance classes, or some would be language specialists or scientists, and you never fall too far from the tree. We were just always chasing any shape ball. Someone throws it, I'll chase it.
Fair enough.
You're actually in the Festival of Sport this year, aren't you?
Yeah, we've set that up. We used to run it in and around London. We've moved it to the North Norfolk coast to place the Holcombe Hall estate. And we're super excited. We've got we're delighted that COVID will be with us, but the COVID regulations are relaxing a little to allow families and friends to get together and enjoy each other's company. And I value the food I put into my body and the sleep and the exercise. So there might not be that much sleep at the festival, but there'll be a lot of exercise and great food and family and friends and music. So really looking forward to that.
That sounds amazing. You say, Will, that you spent a lot of your childhood in Italy. What was it like growing up in Italy?
I was a little Roman street urchin, is how I was often described. I have a very heavy Roman accent when I speak Italian. A bit like I can tell Adam is from the South Wales Valleys, and
yep.
I have a sort of Blackburn accent when I sort of go back home. But if I drop into Italian, it's very Roman, and loved it out there, outdoors, lovely beaches, great family. We went for a year. I was only one. We went for a year and we stayed for sort of six as a family. So those sorts of experiences are very lucky to have gone through that, and we remember it very fondly in our family.
Oh, man, it's a beautiful country.
When you were a child, you played a lot of rugby and cricket. When did you choose to focus on just rugby?
Do you know what? Even when I was playing international rugby, I was still playing as many sports as I could. I just happened to be slightly better at rugby. So people know me as a rugby player, but would still play in charity cricket games whenever I could. Never, ever, ever turn down a game of five-a-side. I love whacking a golf ball around a course. Love staying fit, keeping healthy, so gyms and running. So Yeah, Tom, that's a really, really good question. I am known for my rugby, hence people assume I gave everything else up. The reality was that's a lot of players do that in order to focus, but I felt that actually I could continue to learn so much about sport and life from other formats of different games, which would make me a better rugby player.
Would you recommend that, Will? Because so many sports are transferable, so especially for children. Would you recommend focusing on one sport or just playing as many sports as possible?
Many sports as possible. There might be an individual sport like golf, and you have to learn to control the frustration, control the anger, and stay and leave poor shots behind you. And then in a group context, sometimes you're the best player out there and you have to carry others. And so there's a huge mindset about it. You have to be much more selfless in a team game. You have to sometimes depart stage left to allow others to take the stage and be the key focal point of the team. And then others time you have to be the tip of the spear. So, absolutely. And I think different ball flights and certain sports where you use both hands or both feet would help you transfer into different sports. So there's physical transferability, there's mental transferability, and I think the more you have the breadth of your training and the breadth of your sporting knowledge allows you to focus and stay calm in your chosen specialised sport, because you have so many different things you can draw on.
You started your professional career at Harlequins. What was that like to sign your first professional contract?
Now, I'm always hesitant to call and say, well, actually, technically, Tom, I started my professional career weirdly enough at Leicester. Because I was old enough, I'm like, when I played, it was sort of black and white and there was no streaming services and we only had three channels. And I was stood alongside Moses on one of my first rugby games. It was that long ago. So I actually started my amateur career at Preston Grasshoppers, then Waterloo, then Harlequins, and then rugby went professional because there was this amazing fellow who's passed away now, sadly. It was called Jonah Lomu. And in the World Cup of 1995, he took the world by storm. New Zealand actually didn't win that final in 95, and South Africa won, and Nelson Mandela, just after about 4 or 5 years after he'd been released from Robben Island and had become the leader of South Africa, brought the country together. And Francois Pienaar was the winning captain for South Africa. And people realised that rugby should be professional and should have dedicated professional sports teams and allow athletes to become the best version of themselves. Moved to a club left, which is a professional club. And I loved it there, and it gave me the opportunity in the springboard, but it was behind an amazing pack. It was a bit like, if you're sort of comparing football, an amazing goalkeeper and back four. So if you're an attacking player with that solidity behind you, it allowed me just to go out and express myself. And so from there, I was picked for international teams and played internationally for 8 years on the back of that. But I like to think I never lost my boyish enthusiasm and never forgot that it was simply a game. I still wanted to win every game and be as best as I could possibly be. But I liked to think I still felt every match was a challenge where I had to try and fix problems. And the problems were the opposition trying to stop me when I had the ball or run over me when they had the ball. And so I had to work out ways where I could do that and keep my arms and legs attached to my body.
You moved to Tigers in 1996 and had a very successful time at the club. What was the highlight for you during your time there?
Leaving. with my body intake, it was ferociously difficult at Leicester.
It was a very successful team there, wasn't it, Will?
Yeah, very, very physical team. And I sort of suggest, why was I successful in leaving? And then I sort of left in one piece. The training there was so physical and so tough. And some of the training sessions were harder than a lot of the matches. So I realised actually the reality was my body just couldn't cope physically. Leicester would regularly fall apart And so I left and went back to London, to Harlequins, which played a very different style of game. But I went back and, yes, very a lot of friends at Leicester. And I met my wife in Leicester. And so 25 years later, we're still here. We're doing some house renovations at the moment. And, yeah, we're doing well to still be here as a pair. So, no, it's all good. And, yeah, fond memories, Tom, from Leicester. Are you from the Midlands, Nigel?
Can you tell, Will? Yes, I am.
Okay, yes. Are you a Villa fan or a Brummie or a Brummer fan or a West Brom Baggies fan?
Warsaw.
I'm so Warsaw sorry FC. To hear that.
Yeah, I know. That's a common retort, yeah. Yeah, it's a frustrating experience supporting Warsaw. Yeah,
somebody's got him.
If you achieve mid-table obscurity, you have reason to celebrate. So we'd like to share some of our fantastic messages that we have received. Our first one comes from Harriet in Cardiff, and she says, "Wow, I love this podcast. What fantastic guests and brilliant hosts. I look forward to listening to every episode."
When she says fantastic hosts, this is all about Tom. You two Muppets, trying your best to bring the quality down. But Tom's like one of the great chat show hosts. He's like Parky. He's so good. He's like Terry Wogan. For the younger generations, you're doing a very good Graham Norton impression, Tom.
He's been fantastic, he's Tom.
Who Parky and Graham and who was it? The one Terry Wogan were for our younger listeners.
And our next message comes from James in South Africa, who says, "Brilliant podcast. You are a real credit to your school. Keep up the good work." So thank you. Keep the messages coming in. We really appreciate them. It's competition time on the TWS Sports Podcast, and we have a special prize to give away. We have teamed up with Surprise Shirts, and they have provided us with a prize for a competition. So if you answer the following question correctly, you'll be in with a chance of winning one of these mysterious football shirts, and they can be from any team in the world. So our question is, in our recent podcast with England cricketer Matthew Hoggard, he talked about who the most irritating cricketer he has played against was. If you tell us the name of the most irritating cricketer Matthew Hoggard said, then you'll be in a chance of winning these prizes. So please message us on social media or email twssportspodcast@hotmail.com.
You were called up for your first British and Irish Lions tour in 1997, but that ended early for you. What are your memories of that tour?
Not many, because I got my head knocked in.
Oh, dear.
I had a great time, but it ended rather disappointingly with a heavy head knock, which left me unconscious for about 17 minutes. And the amazing thing is, Tom, everyone, wow, that guy's so brave to come back and play rugby. He's like, he's a titan. He's amazing. And my simple answer, Tom, is if you can't remember anything, there's nothing to be scared of. the incident itself, I remember before the 4 days later. For all you mums and dads out there who are now worried and thinking, I should never let my child anywhere near rugby pitch, I would do it all again, because rugby gave me my fondest memories, my fondest friends, my greatest experiences, and allowed me to travel the world with some really special people playing the sport I loved. And the reality is, with rugby, it's really going to hurt. And it doesn't matter how good you are, it's still really, really going to hurt. And actually coming through those tough games builds your resilience physically and mentally to be able to take knocks in life. And I think it's important that to understand that it rains in life. There are bad days in life. But if you have a really good support network around you and a really good team who allow you to pick yourself back up and be there for you and to allow them to lean on you at times, life can be very fulfilling and very rewarding. And I actually feel going through difficult times are a necessity in life in order to have a great life. I think if you never have those times or don't experience them until later in life, then they can really knock you and jolt you. So some of the finest people I know had really tough childhoods and really tough experiences, and that's given them a much broader outlook on life and makes them much better companions and friends for when you go through tough times.
You made your England debut in a 15-all draw against Australia. What was it like to make your debut for England?
Oh, wow. Tunnel, the changing room, the roar, the crowd, the England shirt, the rose on your chest. Incredible. An incredible day, Tom. It really was. I hadn't grown up wanting to play for England. That doesn't mean I wasn't patriotic. I just never felt I was going to be good. I was a bit like Donkey from Shrek, Tom. Just kept jumping up and down. Pick me. And eventually someone did. I was like, oh, someone's picked me. I never took it for granted. I worked my socks off. I know I wasn't the best player to play for England, but I certainly wasn't the worst. And I just tried to make sure I gave everything on the rubber field and could look in the mirror at the end of the game and go, even if we won, even if we lost, I couldn't have done any more, because great teams lose. You know, sometimes you come up across a bigger dog in the playground, someone who turns you over, and you have to acknowledge that. And I think as long as, say, you've given your all and you've had your best, then, as I said, like, it's okay to rain in life and it's okay to have tough days. It's on a sports field, I know it sounds strange, it's okay to lose. There are some amazing teams and some amazing individuals out there, and sometimes you come across them, but just make sure you make it as hard as possible for them to win, as hard as possible for them to have more points than you at the end. And if that happens, you shake hands, you have a beer or a shandy with each other, and you move on.
Even the mighty Wales lose occasionally, don't they?
It's been known, Evan.
Well,
didn't they lose against Denmark?
It's, great to see Welsh sport on the crest of another slump. Am I allowed, Tom, to ask you a question?
Of course you are.
Because my daughter is autistic and she is absolutely awesome. And sometimes I'm learning about my relationship with her, and I often think there's a great phrase, which I think is slightly wrong, which says, treat people as you would like to be treated. And I actually think it should be treat people as they would like to be treated. So in terms of my vocabulary, Tom, how would you describe yourself and learn from you? I would be able to have a better conversation with my daughter or more of the autistic community, because I'm clumsily enthusiastic sometimes, Tom, and I say things that goes, no, that's just wrong. So just give me 1 or 2 minutes about you, Tom, and the best way that I can help and support and be there for other autistic children and adults.
Well, it's basically like sometimes that extra guidance is needed, and I'm lucky sometimes because most autistic, like, children or anyone with autism don't understand the certain ways that people explain certain things, or the certain conversations to have and what not to have. But in a way, even though there is also the downsides to having autism, it's kind of like carried me in a way. And it's kind of like, even though it kind of like makes me feel in the dumps at times, I always am grateful, because if I didn't have autism, it probably wouldn't have gave me the certain traits that I've been gifted in a way. So,
and so would you, do you say to people, I am autistic, or do you say I'm living with autism? What's the best language that we can use?
I just say that I have a bit of autism, like it's kind of like just there, but I don't know the best way to word it, but it's like I have a bit of it. So,
and your school, you know, so do I describe? So my daughter goes to a fabulous school called Beach Lodge. And do you prefer us to talk about your school as a school for those with additional needs, additional learning? How is it a special needs school? Or tell me What's the best language to talk about schools, wonderful schools like yours?
I would say it's like one of those type of situations where it's like, it's definitely special needs, but there's always like different categories for like each spectrum of the type of pupils that are in the school. So,
and which, tell me, because there are potholes in life, aren't there? We want to avoid potholes and in any way offending. What vocabulary should I never use for children or adults with autism? What are the words that just go, oh, no, you might talk about our amazing community like that?
Usually there hasn't been like something the way people word it. It's usually just like specific words on how people feel or but surprisingly, I don't have that. Funny enough, I only ever experienced this once, and it was, I went through a stage back in 2017 where I got that in like enveloped or whatever it is, where like you get like really serious about it, and that was the word opinion, because I went through a stage where, because people clashed because of opinions, it kind of got into my head. But luckily I went away from that stage, but there are still autistic people out there who don't like specific words because of the meaning and how it kind of like clashes in their mind. So it's mainly that's the thing to worry about.
Okay, well, if I say anything at all, because we're all learning, always, your sponge, like our sponge like brains, will always take little tidbits in. If there's anything that I use in my words, please pull me up. Feedback is a gift, and I really enjoy spending some time with you on this podcast.
We have come to the part in the podcast where we are joined by another podcast. So joining us today on the TWS Sports podcast is Andrew Edwards. So Andrew is autistic, and he has wrote a number of different books, as well as working in the sports industry for a number of years. Welcome to the podcast, Andrew.
Thank you, Adam.
Andrew, we've got a quiz for you, if that's okay.
Thank you.
So this is a Manchester United quiz. So we're
If it's anything recent, I've got zero interest in what's happened recently in the last decade. So
I think the earliest is. Well, the latest is the mid-2000s, so hopefully.
I might have a chance to get them right there.
So it's quiz time now on the TWS Sports podcast, and today we've got a special Manchester United quiz for you. So, question one. Who did Roy Keane play his last match for Man United against?
Liverpool and Anfield, 0-0 draw, December 2005.
Correct.
Who did Cristiano Ronaldo make his Man United debut against?
Bolton Wanderers.
Correct.
Okay. Who was Man United's top scorer in the 2000/2001 season with 21 goals?
Teddy Sheringham.
Is correct.
Correct. Well, I think we need to get a little bit harder with these. Which pundit, referring to Alex Ferguson's Manchester United team in 1995,
famously said, Alan Hansen.
David Beckham scored his last goal for Man United at what stadium?
Goodison Park.
Yeah.
Which player took the number 7 jersey after Cristiano Ronaldo left?
Michael Owen.
At 46 years, 281 days, which player was the oldest to ever appear for Manchester United?
Neil McBain.
Wow. I can see why you worked as a statistician for Manchester United TV.
I haven't done seven and a quarter years though now, 7 1/3 years. Thank you, Nigel. Thank you, Adam. Have a nice day.
We all did. Cheers. And yourself?
Yeah, it's you, Nigel. Sorry.
Me.
I've got a question for you. So as host, right, I've got a question for you. So can I give you some feedback as host?
Please do. Right,
here's some feedback at Cos. An interview is like a dance.
This is our first podcast. When we're not next to each other. So it's a bit more robotic, I'm afraid.
You can't cope. You need
We're struggling. We are struggling, Will.
I've noticed, Tom. They are struggling, aren't they, Tom?
Yeah.
we need Tom with us to bind us together. He's like the glue.
England won the World Cup in 2003 in Australia, and that was such an incredible tournament for you. How, if you can, put it into words, how amazing that tournament was for you and what your memories of that tournament?
A really interesting question. We went into that tournament as the favourites and as the number one team in the world. So that's very different to going into a tournament like England have with the football as sort of one of the favourites and a team with a chance. So the reality is, it was just relief. So that we'd won, in a way, that we weren't another English team that had failed to live up to the expectation. And so, actually, I've had most of my great sporting moments have been as a fan. Because in Australia, we were just doing our jobs and trying to get over the line and finding a way to win, even when we weren't playing well, to deliver on the promise and the talent we had. So, of course, when the final whistle went, it was special and we jumped up and down. But the whole tournament was actually just doing the little things right all the time and staying focused and pivoting if we needed to pivot, if we needed to change tactics mid-game, being really cold and clinical about it. So it is one of those things where when I then watched England win the Cricket World Cup or when I watched Aguero score that goal against QPR to win the Premier League title for us for the first time, I went, right, I get what everyone's talking about from Australia. Because I didn't really know what everyone was going, well, the place has gone barmy, the country's gone mad, there's people, because the time difference, they're all drunk at 10 o'clock in the morning because the game's just finished. And I was like, and there's 10,000 people waiting for you at the airport at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm going, why would they do that? And I never really understood it until being on the other side and experiencing it as a fan. And it was just and I know Gareth Southgate's talked about it, but he's just so pleased to be able to put smiles on people's faces. And I look back on it with great pride that a lot of people who are sort of 40 years old now, or at least sort of 30, come up to me and go, it was one of the great autumns, one of the great days of our lives. We remember exactly where we were when that moment happened. And I think that's the thing that I'm privileged to have been involved in.
Did you find that being favourites for the tournament, did that create additional pressure or did it fire you up?
We had a really grounded team. And actually, we got to a stage in our careers where we believed we could beat anyone. Now, it didn't mean we would beat anyone, but it took great confidence, even though it was such a physical sport and could be a frightening sport at times. And it would grip you with fear before the games because you knew who wants to play something or do something where you know in advance for 80 minutes it's really going to hurt and your lungs will be stretched. And your bodies will ache and you'll need ice baths for a week afterwards. Who actually signs up to do that every week for 15 years? I mean, I look back at myself and go, completely barmy to want to play. I should have played tiddlywinks, much more fun. Or golf. But actually, the great memories I have of that team are the groundwork that we put in, the training we put in, to prepare us to be able to stand in a tunnel and, as I said, not assume and not be arrogant enough to look at opposition and think, well, we're better than them, but to always be able to think that no matter how well those opponents play, that if we stay calm and play as well as we can, no matter what they do, we can find a way to win. And that's a special place to be.
You're saying that the 2003 World Cup obviously is a very serious occasion. You took your matches very seriously. But there must have been some mighty moments as well. I mean, you had some real characters there, didn't you? You had, of course, there's Johnny Wilkinson, Martin Johnson. Do you have any funny stories from that World Cup?
Yeah, so I like the intro to that. And you're going, well, you had some great characters there and there's some very funny people. And then you've named two of the least funny people. I mean, Martin Johnson, just, you know, I love him and he's much funnier now. He wasn't really, he'd say himself, I'm not really a fun kind of guy. He doesn't really like people. And Johnny was very introverted. So great start to the question, Nigel. Terrible ending.
I've got two other characters here. Jason Robinson and Matt Dawson.
Yeah, name.
I'll do it again.
Closer. Yeah, Mike Tyndall and Ian Bolshaw and Lewis Moody and Steve Thompson and Benny Cohen. Fabulous characters. I mean, sometimes that we're having really important meetings, and they'd come out with statements, and you just go, "Have you been listening? Or do you know what sport we're actually playing?" So that the key to life in a team, people. A blend. Yeah, you need people to know all of the rules, and you need people to know none of them. You need people to be planning for every eventuality, every detail, and then those who just play instinctively. And that's the beauty of the best team I've seen in any sport. A team that celebrates difference and has complementary skill sets. They're the ones that make it to finals. They're the ones that win. The teams that just have a plan A, I think, rely on a little bit more luck, because if you've only got one way to win, I'm telling you, there's some clever people out there. They'll find a way to stop you using your super strength. And then what do you do? You've got nowhere to go.
Yeah, very true. Well, I just want to take you to the last minute of extra time in that game. Johnny Wilkinson, 30 yards out, drop goal. Was there any point in that time where you thought you might miss, or was it always straight over the posts? And
he'd already missed four, so he couldn't miss another. it would have been a much shorter game if he'd dropped the goals earlier on.
very true.
No, he hadn't missed four. He was an extraordinary character, a wonderful human being. And I think that's one of the things. If you offer me a team, 15 players with amazing talent, or 15 players with incredible character, I'd always want to play with the 15 players with incredible character. You can upskill yourself. You can manufacture talent. Character, it's in you. You've got it. You're selfless. You're a team player, or you're not. And those chaps that I played with for so many years, you just wanted by your side because you know they'd do the right thing. And when you've got that sort of caliber of individual within the organisation, you can turn your hand to anything.
Well, I've always wondered, in a rugby match, I watch a lot of rugby, I'm a big rugby fan. I've never seen a rugby game end in a draw after extra time. If that game went to a draw, what happens? Is there a penalty or some sort of penalty shootout, or what happens in rugby?
So there was a European Cup game a few years ago that they go to place kicks. Ours would have gone, a World Cup goes to drop five and different people, like a penalty shootout.
And would you have been one of the five?
I was number four. Every Englishman can thank their lucky stars that it never went to a penalty shootout. Because I would have been I'd have done a reverse Southgate or a reverse Stuart Pearce. They sort of blazed it over the bar, Chris Waddle, which is not what you want in football, but rugby. I'd have drilled one like a grass cutter, a pea shooter.
Awesome left corner.
Across the floor. I would have scored a goal at the Olympic Stadium and gone, yeah, and they've gone, you buffoon, it's supposed to go over.
It's competition time on the TWS Sports Podcast, and we have a special prize to give away. As we have mentioned, we have teamed up with Surprise Shirts, and they have provided us with a prize for our competition. So if you answer the following question, then you will receive or be with a chance to win a mystery shirt from Surprise Shirts. Our question is, in a recent podcast with England cricketer Matthew Hoggard, he talked about who the most irritating cricketer he's ever played against was. What is the name of the most irritating cricketer that Matthew Hoggard has ever played against? So if you know the answer, then please could you email TWS Sports Podcast or contact us on our social medias, which is TWS Sports Podcast, and you'll be in with a chance of winning a mystery shirt.
Good luck.
What did you do the night that you won the World Cup?
I went into Sydney.
Great place.
And had a great party.
Were you hated by the Australians in Sydney?
Really good party. It was a slow start. It was very late. We didn't really want to leave the changing room because it was such a special place. But then when we got into town, yeah, we made up for it. We made up for it. It was fun.
How did the Australians react to you?
They were great. Australians are really nice people. And they obviously wanted to win, but I think they acknowledged a good team, as in us, when we did win. And it was a great game. And to be fair, they'd gone into that tournament struggling a little bit. And so they were over the moon to make the final. Of course, they wanted to win, but they also acknowledged and understood that their team had done unbelievably well to make the final.
I read that the then Prime Minister, he wasn't very gracious when he handed over the trophy. Did that come across?
No, that was all about the time. That was all about the time that was allowed left for the TV. He literally had 30 seconds to give out all the medals before they had to go to an advert break. So, yeah, he's been pilloried for that, but actually it wasn't his fault.
That's fair enough.
We'll let him off.
Thank you for setting us straight on that one.
Just coming up to more your recent times now, and we obviously got the Lions tour coming up this summer, and I've seen your podcast as well. I watched the one with Sam Warburton this week. How do you think the Lions are going to get on this summer? Obviously, they had a great win last night. What's your predictions?
Well, first of all, I hope the series takes place. There's obviously a lot of COVID in South Africa with the Delta variant, and it's unfortunately flying around, and the Lions themselves have had issues, and South Africans have had problems. So I hope, most importantly, that the series goes ahead. And then I hope it's competitive. So, look, in an ideal world, it's 1-1 when they head to Johannesburg for the third test on August the 7th. And that would be a dream match to be 1-1, the series on the line, a bit like it was in 2017.
Since retiring, do you like working in TV and how have you found it?
I try not to take myself too seriously, as you may or may not have noticed. I do a lot of research around the game, so I watch a lot of rugby in my spare time to make sure I know as much as possible about all the players playing, because if you're going to criticise them, you need to make sure you can offer a solution and also understand that you need to be constructive with that criticism. So you need to know all around when their team's game. And then I've just been lucky to be invited back. And if I don't get invited, I've had a great time, great, great time doing it. I'm thinking about going into some stand-up comedy, Tom, because I've got great jokes like, what do you call two Spanish firemen?
What do you call them?
Hose A and Hose B.
That's a joke my dad would say.
You're getting the market with that.
Well, all I'm saying is 100% laugh from all three of you. So that'll do me.
That's a start. I'll come and watch you on tour, Will.
Thanks, guys. A ticket's available. I'll be at the Walsall Arena.
You think Walsall got an arena?
With Nige as my warm-up act.
Hey, love to. Thank you so much. It's been brilliant. And thank you so much for the way that you brought Tom and asked Tom questions as well. I'm sure you appreciate that, Tom, as well.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks.
Lovely to chat, Tom. You take care of yourself. Yeah, well done to the school. Well done to the podcast. Well done to Adam for reaching out. And it was my pleasure. It was my privilege to be interviewed by Tom. As for those two other Muppets, it was
all right. You'll sort of say it to Will, don't you worry.
See you soon, guys.
Thank you very much.
Right, so boys, we've come to the end of season one. How have you found the podcast this year?
It's been a great experience so far. Really been enjoying it.
I can't believe it's season one's over already, Adam. It's gone so quick.
I know.
It's just gone from strength to strength as well. It's amazing.
I know. So what we've done, this will be our 11th episode. So 11 weeks, they've flown by.
They really have. And I feel as though I've learned a lot as well, because obviously, we have to do lots of research for all the guests, for people on the podcast who won't know me, obviously. I'm not particularly sporty. I don't know lots about sport, and a lot of the sports that we've been covering are totally new to me. So, yeah, it's been a massive learning curve as well.
Well, Nigel, I'm sure our listeners will never know. They'll think you're the Gary Lineker of sport.
I hope so.
So, looking back at our guests, we've had 11 episodes, but there's been 10 guests. Nigel, I'll start with you. Who's been your favourite guest you've had on and why?
Oh, gosh, there's been a few, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a few memorable ones. For Johnny Owen was really enjoyable to chat to, and he seemed so enthusiastic. He really enjoyed being on the podcast, talking with the boys, and he was just a pleasure to talk to. And then we've had so many interesting stories as well. I mean, Ty Wufferdon, the story about how he did chop his finger off when he was 13 years old when he was on his bike. And then carried on riding to school afterwards. I thought that's stunning. And I've enjoyed talking to Peter Baker as well, because Peter Baker was a golfer at the time that I was watching golf, and he's played with some of my sporting heroes, not least Seve Ballesteros. So, yeah, it's quite a few.
Yeah, it's been a great lineup. What about you, Tom? Who's been your favourite guest you've had on?
My favourite has been Hoggy, and aka Matthew Hoggard. And I enjoyed everything about him and the funny experiences he had. And overall, I just find him a very charming person. So, yeah, and he has a very beam of personality.
He was very good.
I missed that podcast and I listened to it and it sounded amazing. I really wish I'd been on that one.
Looking at my favourite podcast, I really enjoyed this one today with Bill Greenwood. He was very funny. He was very easy to talk to. He had lots of interesting and funny stories to tell us. But yeah, I might have to agree with you, Tom. I think Matthew Hoggard, I think, was my favourite. I really enjoyed his stories of how he was quite rude to Tony Blair, which I found quite funny. And also the story of winning the Ashes and beating Australia. He knew all about the games in the Ashes and how close they were and what it was like to be in the middle of the pitch at the time. I find really, really interesting. But we've got lots of great guests coming up as well, and we've already recorded some of Series 2, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got them
indeed.
So, Nigel, who have we got so far coming up on Series 2?
Well, I do know that we've got a very special guest, ex-England goalkeeper Joe Hart, coming up.
We do. So we are going to start season two off with, ex-England footballer and Premier League champion Joe Hart. We also have Australian cricketer Marnus Labuschagne. And we've also recorded a podcast with Welsh rugby player Alex Popham. So we've got our three podcasts already set up. So we're already ready for season two.
And we're looking forward to some more great guests joining us as well. And I hope everyone else is too.
Fab. So thank you so much. And again, Tom, who also is on the podcast, who was on a lot of the first few episodes, sadly hasn't really been able to join us much for the latter parts of this series. And he sadly can't be joining us today. But I just want to say a big thank you to Tom, who's really been fantastic on this podcast. And he leaves the school this summer. So just like to say thank you so much, Tom, for all your hard work. And you've been great to chat to you and a great co-host on the podcast. So thank you so much for joining us, Tom.
Yeah, you're leaving a difficult position to fill there, Tom. So yeah, you've been fantastic. So good luck in the future, Tom.
So moving forward into September, so we are going to come back as soon as the school starts again. We're going to come back with episode one. So we're going to have to find a new co-host for us, Tom.
Tom, I'd like to ask you, what have you felt that you've gained from this podcast?
Well, I've gained, I think, even though sometimes my memory sometimes fades a bit, I have also kind of like still like processed a bit, and then also kind of like had more guidance of like kind of like remembering questions and also kind of thinking of a few like things to mention / add on.
Definitely progress that I've seen over the 2.5 months, Tom, in you has been fantastic. You've really developed those skills. Your communication, your confidence has really, really come on, and you've recently done interviews. You did an interview last week with a lady in America, didn't you? You were on the local radio this week. So the opportunities that's providing you and the way you're handling and adapting to situations and the skills you're developing are fantastic. So congratulations.
Fingers again.
And Nigel, I think me and you need a bit of work as well, because quite often it's me and Nigel that mess up when asking the questions.
Well, I always think that Tom and Tom are the glue that binds us all together, to be honest with you. Without them, it would be shambles.
Definitely, I agree.
Can I give a mention as well to my friend Andrew Cottrell, who does the theme music for our podcast? He recorded that for us. He didn't charge us. So I just want to say a big thank you to Andrew Cottrell. Cheers, mate. And if you want to hear more of Andrew Cottrell, you can listen to him on Bandcamp.
Well, thank you so much, Andrew. It's a great tune as well. I really like it. Right, well, thank you so much for Series 1, lads. I've really, really enjoyed it. I hope you all have a fantastic summer. Enjoy the sunshine.
You too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back at the start of September for Series 2. So thank you so much for listening to our first series of the podcast. And I hope everyone at home and everyone listening has a great summer as well.
Super. Thank you very much, folks, for listening. We couldn't do without your support. Please continue to support us and make sure you pass on your message to all your friends and family.
The TWS Sports Podcast combines autism and sport. This unique podcast is hosted by children with autism, and each week they interview famous sportsmen and women from around the world. The TWS Sports Podcast takes you deep into the sports star's career, their highs and lows, what happens away from the field of play, and so much more. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. The TWS Sports Podcast, where autism and sports combine.
Sports Social Podcast Network.